This program is not being used to make diagnosis, administer treatment, prescribe medication, or order tests. The information contained in this program is provided as an educational service. This program is not a replacement for the relationship you have with your healthcare provider. If you have concerns about your health, please contact your healthcare provider.
Welcome to The Checkup on WCLK with Dr. Courtney M. Shelton, MD. Dr. Shelton is a board-certified internist and primary care physician. Today's program features common sense health information you can use for happier, healthier outcomes in your life. Here's Dr. Shelton.
Good morning. This is Dr. Shelton with The Checkup. One of the things we want to talk about today is asthma and allergies. Asthma is a major cause of work absence, school absence, loss of quality of life, disability, and even death. Sometimes we take asthma for granted. Allergies are major triggers for asthma attacks. It seems as though many people who move to the South, especially Atlanta, that originally from the North, they often develop asthma here or their asthma worsens. Today on The Checkup, we will be discussing asthma and allergies in Atlanta with Dr. Anna Topu, who is an awesome pulmonologist and also my pulmonologist. Dr. Topu, it's great to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning to you, and thank you for that nice introduction.
All right. Well, Dr. Topu, tell us a little bit about your academic background and how you and what you do as a pulmonologist.
Well, I finished my internal medicine residency and pulmonary critical care fellowship at Emory University School of Medicine. Subsequent to the fellowship training, I have been in the private practice. Currently, I also teach in the internal medicine residency program. I teach the residents and medical students. I am also assistant professor at the Ross University School of Medicine. Sometimes I do have elective residents from Emory University and other universities coming in to shadow and learn from me.
So you have quite a busy schedule.
But not busy for patients.
That's the most important thing, too. When we talk about asthma, it's always interesting. You hear about how some people even say, well, I grow out of my asthma. First of all, why don't we define asthma? Can you define asthma for us?
Yes. Asthma is such a generic term that is used when anyone starts to wheeze and have either cough or chest tightness or some allergy, some nasal drip draining into the chest. Pretty much asthma is termed as a general term for anything that affects the lungs, which is technically by definition is reversible. It's called reversible bronchospasm, which means that the airways tighten up and they are trying to push out whatever is attacking the airways. Now, there are several different types of asthma in terms of intrinsic, extrinsic asthma, and also occupational asthma. You talk about asthma related to exercise, asthma related to cold weather. It can be many, many, many things. Sometimes patients can even develop asthma symptoms after an acute bronchitis episode. Never really had any history of asthma. However, after an infection or bronchitis, they might continue to have cough and wheezing lasting for months and eventually for many years. So asthma is something that we normally say anyone that has cough, congestion, chest tightness, wheezing, sometimes they may just have only cough, in which case we call it cough variant asthma. So in summary, asthma is something which is a common term used for any of the presentation symptoms that I described a little while ago. So anyone that has a cough, whether they know it is asthma or not, it's better to get it checked out. Similarly, anyone that's feeling tight, if their cardiologist or medical doctor says that there is no cardiac etiology, it's better to get it checked out to see if their airways are reacting to something or they're tightening up and they need more air.
I'm glad you mentioned cough, because often people that have a chronic cough, a nighttime cough, they don't realize that that's asthma. That could be asthma or is asthma. And because when, you know, naturally people think that asthma is always wheezing, they just think of the wheezing aspect of it without understanding that coughing is a sign of asthma too. So I'm glad you mentioned that. When you think about asthma, what are some of the triggers? You mentioned cold air, you mentioned exercise. What are some of the common triggers for asthma?
The most common thing is, as a pulmonologist, when I'm seeing the patients, if they have asthma since their birth, they have perhaps something intrinsic in their family history, multiple family members. And most common one that we normally see is extrinsic, which is usually triggered by something either in the environment. When we talk about environment, it could be perhaps some sycamore, some oak trees, pollen, cockroaches. It could be any of the little insects. Most common thing could also be coming from home, which is dust mites. So environmental is not uncommon, which comprises of the trees and the insects and the dust mites. The second common other thing that I see, which is very commonly overlooked, is environmental. A lot of the people who are coughing and congested and have asthma symptoms might come in and come to find out they may be hairdressers or they may be working in the grocery store in meat wrapping. So we call that a meat wrapper's asthma. And someone may be working in a chemical factory, and you can have any of those chemicals trigger reactivity in the airways, which means the airways can get tight, the airways can cause wheezing, cough, mucus. You may not have all of them, but any of them could be an indicator that your airways are being irritated by something. So we talked about environmental, we talked about chemical induced, and let's talk about even food. A lot of the foods also have some proteins, and sometimes you talk about peanuts being the most common thing where patients, we see a lot of them having anaphylactic shocks. Yes, some of the foods and also even insect bites, for example, a bee sting or a spider, any of the insect stings, peanuts, egg whites, perhaps even some fruits. Some people may even have anaphylactic shock for strawberries, kiwi, tomatoes, corn. A lot of the older patients can develop allergies to the same food that they have eaten for many years, and their coughing and wheezing may not improve, in which case I usually try to do an extensive allergy testing on these patients to see if they are allergic to something that they have been eating for many years, but then body has undergone some changes, and now the body cannot tolerate the same food that they have been eating for many years. So that was the third category. And then comes, of course, the exercise, as I told you. Some athletes and also people who run and exercise, the exercise itself can trigger airway inflammation. There could be a lot of inflammatory cells accumulating in the lining of the airways, and it could tighten up. And some of the athletes may actually pass out after running, where it may be just a simple airway tightening and exercise-induced asthma. So coming back to elaborate on the triggers, you can start from the day to end it even with basic things like, even though there may be dermatological things, you may be inhaling powder. You may be inhaling even recreational things that could stimulate airway inflammation and mimic asthma.
You mentioned something about hairdressers. What is it that stimulates the asthma from the hairdressers?
The hairdressers are exposed to so many things, and they deal with hairsprays. They also deal with bleaching agents and many of the chemical products used for either hair styling, straightening, whatever may be. But the two major chemicals that have been studied are persulfates as well as paraphenylene diamine. In fact, I am even not sure if henna is another product that could also be involved in some of the asthma symptoms.
You know, people always, the patients that have asthma that come to the clinic, they often, when I'm taking a history, they all say, oh, I grew out of my asthma. And I always say, no, you never really grow out of asthma. Do you hear that a lot in your practice?
Yes, I do. A lot of patients will tell me that they have been really sick in and out of the hospitals as a child, middle school, and by the time they come to high school or maybe even in college, a lot of them will tell me that they're much better, they do not have asthma anymore, and they don't use any of the inhalers or the treatment. And many of them subsequently do come back either with the recurrence of the symptoms with a touch of bronchitis or some other thing again triggering it. Asthma is a lifelong disease, and basically the airway inflammation is always there, even though it may appear silent many times and the patients may be asymptomatic, or in other words, may not have any symptoms of the active wheezing, coughing, or chest tightness.
If you just tuned into the checkup, my name is Dr. Courtney Shelton, and we're talking about asthma and allergies with Dr. Topu, who is a pulmonologist. When you're evaluating your patients for asthma, I know allergies, we've talked a lot about allergies, and I think our listeners, so most of the lay people, allergies is just such a loose term. Can you define allergies for us?
The allergies are two kinds. One is a protein. Another one is a non-protein. A protein is, or any of the ingredient, whether it is in the food or if it is anything added to an ingredient like a shampoo, protein can trigger an inflammatory cascade, inflammatory reaction that involves so many pathways and trigger inflammation in the airways, swelling, mucus production. Whereas the non-protein ones could simply be just direct contact. Sometimes inhaling some fumes could actually cause inflammation of the airway and also mucus, and basically the lungs trying to flush it out and cough it out. So allergies in general could be anything environmental, insects, dust mites, foods, so, and the chemicals as we talked about. So majority of the ones that we test are the ones that are perhaps protein and some are non-protein. And we usually test them through multiple ways, either blood work and also through skin testing, which is called the pinprick test or prick test.
When we're treating allergies, how effective have allergy shots? We talk about allergy. I think people know them as getting allergy shots, going to the allergy doctor or once a week for a long time and getting shots. How effective is that in controlling asthma?
Allergy shots are very effective in many patients. Majority of the times, it's inconvenience, going every week, or the patient might think it's not doing much for me. But in reality, most of these inflammatory conditions take time. They take time. You are desensitizing. You are exposing your body to what you're allergic to in small quantities, minute quantities, and allowing the body to get used to it. So you cannot fix something overnight, because giving a large quantity of allergy therapy, allergy shots, is going to trigger a worse reaction. So the premise of allergy testing and immunotherapy or allergy shots is basically you're reintroducing what you are allergic to in small, minuscule doses so that your body can get used to it and tolerate it without overreacting with the coughing, congestion, mucus, and wheezing.
What are some of the treatments for asthma? I know a lot of patients use albuterol or Proventil or ProAir as their, what we call their rescue inhaler. What are other methods of treating asthma outside of the allergy testing and treatment?
The number one thing, my approach to asthma is, first step is, how bad is the asthma and how bad are their symptoms? And since most of the patients are familiar with the bronchodilators or the puffers to use it as a common lay term, you have several different kinds of puffers or the inhalers. Now, that is one way of controlling the symptoms and maintaining the symptoms. Whereas if you know exactly what is causing the asthma, perhaps if you're a hairdresser and it is occupational, you may have to change your occupation. If it is related to an area where, if it is environmental and you're allergic to environmental things, allergy immunotherapy or shots help. If it is food allergies, avoidance of the foods that you're very dramatically allergic to. And then the last but not the least, the other things that we normally use, if there is an acute attack, we tend to use steroids in the form of pills or shots. And if there is a concomitant infection, we might also use an antibiotic. But majority of the times, if it is a simple asthma exacerbation or flare-up, we just use only steroids and inhaled bronchodilator therapy. The new therapies for controlling asthma and maintaining asthma, they come in the form of pills and also as shots for maintenance. The pills are called leukotriene antagonists. And don't have to remember the fancy name, but these basically modulate the inflammatory system in the body. Basically, to simplify the terms, it's just saying that don't overreact to something that you're being exposed to. So these pills basically control and limit the body's reaction to the trigger. Examples are, you might have heard of Singulair. You might have also heard of Accolate, A-C-C-O-L-A-T-E. So these are some of the oral preparations. Now, the other preparations that we use in severe refractory or persistent asthma are injections, which are biologic agents. These are, you might hear the names Xolair. The other ones are Nucala and Fresnaro. Then there are some newer preparations that are coming out. They have still not been FDA approved. These biologic agents for oral preparation, and they seem to have a really good promise to be more convenient for the patients to take at home instead of coming to the physician's office or self-administering these shots for maintenance. So Xolair, Nucala, and there are three others that have just been released. They basically approach, is this related to two kinds of allergy? One, we tend to see environmental asthma that responds more to these shots. And especially if there is a particular cell in your white cells called eosinophil. If someone is reacting and their eosinophils are coming into the body's rescue and the eosinophils go up, then Nucala and some of the other newer agents seem to work very well. And so they're indicated for asthma maintenance that is eosinophil mediated. And the one that's not eosinophil mediated, majority of them, they end up staying on Xolair. And there are also three other new products that are going to be released. And I don't think most of the pulmonologists are using them yet. We're just finding out the names, and they're going to be released soon.
Often in primary care, there's a challenge in that the patients take albuterol or their rescue inhaler, and they think that is the most important part of their treatment, and they use that more often than they use their controller medication like Advair or Symbicort, things that kind of control the inflammation. When you see those challenges, what do you do? Because I always have a hard time getting patients to understand that we want to control asthma because it's a chronic inflammatory disease, and using albuterol, it does make you feel good immediately, but it's very important to get control and to control the inflammation.
Well, that is definitely a common scenario we see all the time, because patients want quick improvement.
Right, they are
feeling bad and they want to feel better right away. So there's a tendency to basically reach out to their rescue inhaler like albuterol, Combivent, some of the short-acting inhalers. Unfortunately, these are temporary. I always give an analogy of having a flat tire. The flat tire, you can put some foam on it, which is very temporary. It might take you to another location, but it's going to be flat again. So fixing or reducing whatever the leak in the tire is important. Similarly, reducing the inflammation, not allowing the airway lining to become thickened, and the lining just below the mucosa or the lining inside of the airways. Once this is not controlled and only rescue inhaler is used, the airways can become tighter and tighter, and this could leave a permanent damage in the lungs, and they may develop permanent obstructive airways, and this definitely could limit their ability even to do simple activities. So my suggestion and my recommendation, try to discuss with your pulmonologist if there is a long-acting maintenance medication. So you don't have to take it multiple times. You can take it once in the morning or twice. There are many new asthma medications that you can only take once a day, and it works 24 hours. And leave it right next to your bed on the nightstand. And as soon as you wake up, start your day with the inhaler so you don't have to worry about taking any more inhalers. And once I give them ideas and patients start doing this, they themselves will realize that they don't need to use their rescue inhaler as much anymore, and they just basically use it when they need it, especially exercise or they are coming down with a cold, then they might use it a little more frequently. But otherwise, the idea and goal is to use least amount of medicine, control the asthma, maintain it so that your rescue inhaler requirements go down. And if asthma cannot be maintained with the long-acting inhalers, then, of course, the allergy shots and also these oral preparations like Singulair and Accolade, and also the shots we talked about, Xolair, Nucala, and all the new ones that are going to be released.
Another issue I see in primary care, especially with our pediatric population, is that parents and secondhand smoking. Does secondhand smoke, is that another trigger for asthma?
Absolutely. Secondhand smoke, the impact of secondhand smoke, I don't think people knew before the 1960s and 1970s. In fact, not just the asthma. If you look at secondhand smoke related cancers. There's a 25% increase in kids who are exposed to their parents or grandparents who are smokers. So definitely asthma is, it's such an easy thing. And if parents or grandparents or any of the family members smoke, please do not smoke, you know, among the children who are unfortunately exposed to so many of these, and they eventually develop a lot of airway reactive problems.
When you compare the, let's say, the environment here in Atlanta with the humidity, the population, the humidity, the pollen, the pollution, and all of those things combined seem to really have a huge impact on patients and their treatment of their asthma, and even worsening of their asthma. What are your recommendations for them?
Unfortunately, you can't live in a bubble, and it is impossible to avoid every environmental allergen because you do have to get out of the house and drive. So I would say try to, of course, rain does help to flush out a lot of the pollen and some of the environmental triggers. One is you try to wash your hands more frequently before you touch your nose and manipulate. Number two is you can use nose sprays to reduce the inflammation, and a lot of the allergy nose sprays are available over the counter, Flonase, Nasonex, and if the allergy and pollen count is extremely high, then you can also take an antihistamine. Like, most of these are also over the counter, like Claritin, Allegra, Zyrtec. Any of those things also would really, really help before you leave the house, so the impact would be a lot less. Now, this is only my own suggestion. I'm not sure if there are any studies. But if the pollen is way too high and the allergy count is high, take a shower when you come back home to get it off your, you know, of the exposure from your clothes and your hair and on the skin.
Dr. Topu, I want to thank you for being here today, this morning, and talking about this very important topic. If our listeners want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
Thank you so much for having me and inviting me, and it was an honor. It's such a serious disease that I'm glad you are covering it in your shows today, and I'm glad to be a part of it. I would love to take care of patients who need a second opinion or who want to be reevaluated. My office number is 678-838-3000. I repeat, 678-838-3000. We'll be glad to take care of any of your listeners and patients who need a second opinion. And majority of them, eventually, once you control the symptoms, can have a beautiful life.
Because even though you have asthma, you should still be able to do all the things in life and enjoy. This disease can be controlled, but we need good education, good doctor-patient relationship, and pulmonologists like Dr. Topu.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
You've been listening to The Checkup with Dr. Courtney Shelton. You can listen to this program on demand at WCLK.com. Dr. Shelton can be reached at the Shelton Hospitalist Group, located at 315 Boulevard in Northeast Atlanta, or by phone at 678-705-2355. Or you can like Shelton Hospitalist Group, LLC, on Facebook. The Checkup is produced by Dr. Courtney Shelton, Janice Shelton, and Rob Maynor for WCLK. Thanks for listening.